WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Today on the show, have you ever ridden an e-bike or an e-scooter? If not, you've definitely seen them whoosh by you. And if you have, you probably know that the rules for those devices change from town to town. And now the suburbs and Chicago are all looking to the lawmakers in Springfield to step in and create a statewide standard. We'll talk to a panel of folks with a stake in the issue. And don't forget to stick around after that for a breakdown of the latest local news in and around Chicago. First, though, In the Loop senior producer Meha Ahmed is with me, and she produced this segment. So I'm delighted that she's joining me now. Hey, Meha.
Hey, how you doing, Sasha?
Doing well. I mean, have you ever, and the look on your face is telling me no, but have you ever set foot on an e-bike or e-scooter?
No, I'm okay. I haven't done that.
I had a feeling.
But they've passed me, whether I'm on the Lakefront Trail or, you know, moving about Chicago, and they are fast. And they're surprisingly 20-ish miles per hour, just kind of whooshes by. And you'll see, you know, maybe you'll see an adult on it, but sometimes you see a kid on it and you're thinking, well, that can't be safe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have seen them.
Yeah, most of my e-scooter experience was, you know, when I lived on the East Coast in D.C. And when I think back to those times, I was 1,000% breaking all the rules. I mean, I had no helmet or anything. I was just on the sidewalk. I was the whoosher. I was whooshing by the people. And I don't know. I don't know if I'd set foot on it again here. I tried a couple of days ago with my daughter, and that was short-lived. So I think my scooter days are over.
Let me ask you this. Did you know what the rules here were?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. And I see near accidents all the time. And I wondered what the rules are. But I don't think that people, as they go and they get these divvy bikes and, you know, they rent these scooters, I don't think they're thinking in real time, I wonder if I, how fast I should be taking this, or I wonder if
what the
I,
age restrictions what on the them age are. Or
should, like, I have a license on me?
Yeah. Can I be in the street or the sidewalk? And that's kind of the crux of the issue, right? The debate for e-bikes and e-scooters and the safety around them and what the rules and regulations should be. The debate about this is really ramping up.
Yeah.
Because there's no real statewide set of rules. Each suburb and town is kind of doing their own thing if they're thinking about it, which many are. But really, it is like a half-done patchwork quilt of rules that is still being patched together as we speak. A lot of debates happening around the state. And all the rules vary. Some suburbs have an age restriction. Some have more limitations on the speed you can go. And depending on which suburb you're in, the rules change.
Yeah.
And it's hard to sort of keep track. And the other thing with the e-bikes and e-scooters is a lot of people that ride them are tourists. They're people who come to town who don't have access to a car.
And certainly wouldn't know what the rules are in this city.
Which is fair. Like, they don't know that. They just get on the bike or the scooter and they just go. And so, the pressure is on the state now to do something about it and get to the bottom of things. Is the solution here more rules, or is it investment in infrastructure? And that's kind of the main debate happening
right
now.
That is the question that we will pose to our guests. Our thanks to Meha. Appreciate you.
No problem.
At the table, Nick Hunder, a policy analyst and researcher with Chicago Bike Grid Now. Michael Podgers, who's an urban planner and policy director at Better Streets Chicago. And Democratic Illinois State Senator Mike Simmons of the 7th District.
When we think about an e-bike, the first thing we should think is those e-divvies that we see around town. Basically, that is a bike with a small electric boost. I wouldn't even really call it a motor because you can't, you need to still pedal to get that boost, but you can't like, you can't rev up or anything. Whereas with kind of more like a motorbike or an e-moto, those ones actually have a literal motor. You don't need to pedal to operate it and it can go quite fast. But I'm glad to see that there are a lot more e-bikes around town, more people biking, more people given that opportunity, because the bikes with the e-bikes, the ones with the, just a little boost, it does make a difference when you're tired or maybe you don't have, you can't ambulate on the bike as easily, or if it's just windy and you're biking against the wind, it's very helpful to have that.
Yeah. And so Nick, you know, rules vary, as I alluded to earlier, when it comes to e-bikes and scooters. Let's start with Chicago. Give us a sense of what the main laws that, that folks need to know about e-bikes and scooters here in the city.
Yeah, so to expand on what Michael said, so how the current the city currently defines e-bikes is in three different classes, and scooters in there are in their own category. So like Michael said, e-divvies, the common one that you see are what we call a class one e-bike. Those are pedal assist. They can't go any more than 20 miles per hour. Then there's class two, which introduces that throttle. That also only goes up to 28 miles per hour. But the ones I think that you're seeing a lot of concern around are the class three e-bikes. So those are pedal assist, but they do go up to 28 miles per hour, which is often faster than the municipal speed limit on most roads. And I think that's where you see people sort of being disingenuous, riding on the sidewalk, really not pedaling at all, going at high speeds, making dangerous, unpredictable moves. And that's something we really try to convey to people is the number one thing you can do for your safety is to be predictable.
Senator Simmons, you go north, you go south or west of the city, and those rules that were just outlined can change. Why do we have this patchwork of regulations?
Well, it doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, I use myself an example. So I bike all the time. I have three, I own three bikes. And you know, I bike through my Senate district, which will take you from Howard Street and Rogers Park to Belgrade Street right by Wrigley Field. But that's not where I stop. I mean, I'm gonna bike downtown, I'm gonna bike to the west side, I'm gonna go to the Prairie Path in Oak Park. And I don't want to no one on a bike or any motorist for that matter should be subject to a patchwork of regulations that don't make sense and that are totally unaccountable. So I think this increase in popularity and the increase in e-bikes, and then of course the concerns that come up around safety for e-bikes and scooters raises several thoughts of safety concerns, right, with that patchwork. So what about sidewalk riding and pedestrian risk? What about infrastructure mismatch and lane conflicts? I've personally experienced this. I was on Halsted and Grand last year on my bike coming back from an event, and an e-bike actually came up behind me and almost ran me over. That's because of, and it was, you know, it could have ended very, very horribly, but it was, I think, partially because people are just so confused about what's a bike lane, what's a protected bike lane, what's a signal for a cyclist versus a motorist. And we need our state laws to be a lot more consistent on this so that we have a true grid that works for all multimodal users.
Yeah. Tragically, a teen was recently killed while riding an e-bike in Arlington Heights. This was just a little over a week ago. I'm sure you saw this story, Senator.
I did, yes. It broke my heart. It's totally avoidable.
Arlington Heights Board of Trustees had just passed an ordinance allowing the regulation of e-bikes and e-scooters. Safety is clearly top of mind for all of these suburbs that are debating it. So, I mean, what do you think is the right path forward? Because safety can be top of mind, but it's not necessarily preventing these kinds of crashes and deadly incidents.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that, you know, part of what is needed is just, again, when we talk about safety, we got to be thinking about data and enforcement gaps, equity and access consideration with our railways, including scooters. There's, as you just said, a dramatic increase and particularly younger folks that are using scooters. I'll say, by the way, that as an avid cyclist, I myself am bad at scooters. I've tried to ride scooters, and every time I try to get on one, I almost fall off. So
yeah. It's the reason I got off so quickly last week.
Yeah. So I just want to put that out there for the record that I'm bad at scooters. But I did get passed Senate Bill 2285 last year. I want to talk about that for a minute. I worked on that with Ride Illinois, which is a big advocacy organization that advocates for better state laws to protect non-motorists. And of course, those that are using e-bikes. And so this legislation, what it does is it expands the definition of bicycles in Illinois to include low-speed electric bicycles. It allows for expanded complete streets planning for all that are using bikes so that suburbs like Arlington Heights and other municipalities and suburbs can have consistent rules and consistent roadway recognizable infrastructure for those that are using e-bikes or those that are on scooters and that, of course, are driving or that are like myself on old school bikes. And I think that's going to really help to avoid scenarios like what we saw in Arlington Heights, that tragedy.
Nick and Michael, should we be focused on regulations or infrastructure? What do you think? Michael, you first.
Oh, infrastructure, absolutely.
Tell me more.
So I would say in terms of regulations, you know, it is true that there needs to, we need to give attention to the fact that what people have access to are not just an e-bike, like an e-divvy that we see around, which realistically is not going to go more than about 15 miles per hour, even if you're really booking it. Mm-hmm. So having consistent regulation and policies across the state is much better than kind of this hodgepodge of different municipalities. But without matching that with infrastructure upgrades, it's a half measure. Because at the end of the day, you know, in instances like Samuel's accident that he died from, the infrastructure, even if he was on going fast, should have been in place so that that wouldn't have happened.
And you're referring to the teen who mm-hmm. just died in Arlington Heights.
Correct. Good infrastructure saves lives. And we are not doing the investments that we need at the state level. Even in the city of Chicago, we're not keeping up to the degree we need to make sure that people can get around safely.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, you can put up as many signs as you want on the street. You can put up as many laws as you want on the books. But if the infrastructure isn't there to keep people safe, it's a half measure.
What do you think, Nick? Regulations or infrastructure? What should be our focus?
Absolutely infrastructure. I think a lot of the questions that you ask, like why is this unsafe behavior happening or why are you behaving this way, get answered by why do people feel the need to do that? And I think a very obvious example is why do people bike on the sidewalks rather than the streets where they are legally supposed to be? It's because they do not feel safe on the streets. And even some of the street designs that we currently have in Chicago, people still don't feel safe on. I think a good example is the protected bike lane down by UIC at Roosevelt and Halsted. Mm-hmm. Because the right-of-way is about 78 feet there, people, despite there being a protected bike lane, it's visually daunting. So we have to be really specific about where we put that infrastructure, which is why our group mostly focuses on residential streets. These are already low traffic flow. They're much more comfortable. And it also helps children and anybody else who wants to get around their neighborhood, get around their neighborhood.
Right.
And especially making sure that that's connected like the senator had mentioned, so he can get from Hermosa to Logan Square or to Lincoln Square.
Right. So, you know, Senator, for months we've seen cities and suburbs across the state debate what rules to put in place for e-bikes. You know, from we've seen folks making really strict age restrictions to speed limits. Why doesn't the state have a set standard? Is there political will there to prioritize something like this?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and I would say that we're moving rapidly in that direction. You know, in the 4 years that I've been in the state senate, I've put a lot of energy and time into making this a more fertile issue for the General Assembly, passing probably 7 or 8 bills myself that mm-hmm. make our roadways safer for pedestrians and cyclists. I'm really proud to have worked on that. Some of those bills with a number of the Safe Streets advocacy organizations that have been enraged by the number of avoidable deaths that we have seen on our roadways. You know, children as young as 3 years old that have been killed unnecessarily. You know, and so we can put an end to that. Just real quick, I want to talk about Senate Bill 1960, which I actually helped to pass last year, which actually defines what a low speed electric scooter is and sets requirements for how to use them. This speaks directly to the question you just asked around consistent regulations. So this bill.
Yeah. So you expanded the definition of what a bicycle is, including e-bikes, right?
Yes, but also this other bill that I'm talking about now requires that scooter operators be 18 or older for low speed electric scooters. It defines a class 3 e-bike operator as being needing to be 16 or older. Mm-hmm. It does allow younger riders to use lower class e-bikes if local law allows for it. That's an example where I think we have a gap and we need to shore that part of that legislation up so that it's more consistent. We don't want a patchwork And I point that out as an example of recent progress we've made, but where there's still some loopholes.
Yeah. Would you say any suburb is doing this right, Senator? Like they got the right infrastructure, they got the safest rules?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would, the first suburb that comes to mind is Aurora. Aurora has a pretty decent patchwork of protected bike lanes. That doesn't necessarily speak to motorized e-bikes, but I think it creates more predictability for those like myself that are on a bike so that they don't have an e-bike kind of come up behind them at 30 miles an hour, right? The e-bike may actually be using the roadway, particularly on the street that has less traffic, and the bikes can actually be in the protected bike lanes. Another that comes to mind is a number of the towns that are in the Fox River Valley. So, you know, St. Charles has some pretty good bike infrastructure. But let's be clear, I think we have a long way to go, because I will say on the record that my vision points to Copenhagen. You know, if any of your listeners have been to Copenhagen, or if you haven't and you're really into biking and e-biking, I would Google Copenhagen and just look at images of what the road infrastructure looks like there.
Mm-hmm.
Because when my co-panelists say that infrastructure is the most important thing, I think places like Copenhagen and Amsterdam give people a compelling visual of what that means and what that can look like.
State Senator Mike Simmons of the 7th District, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning.
Thank you.
Hey, if you just got here, welcome. I am Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. From breaking news stories to big ideas, this is your space for context, community, and conversation every weekday morning at 9 a.m. And right now, we're talking about e-bikes and scooters. Regulations vary depending on your city or your suburb. So could Illinois step in with uniform rules? In studio, still with us, is Nick Hunder with Chicago Bike Grid Now, and Michael Podgers, who's an urban planner with Better Streets Chicago. So Nick and Michael, you've been listening to the state senator there. Your immediate reactions to some of the legislative efforts that he's talking about that have been happening down in Springfield. You first, Nick.
Yeah, so we've been on the record as supporting these bills. I think these are very practical changes, and it's a good step in the right direction, because Springfield has been very reactive to these new types of manufacturing of devices. So to see them sort of pushing this forward is a good step, but we can go even further. I think a big push that you're going to see in the next legislative session is for what we call out-of-class mm-hmm. electric vehicles. Basically, the two definitions there are a motor over 750 volts, which is what you find in a cargo bike typically, and exceeding 20 miles per hour on throttle alone. Again, we mentioned earlier that the municipal speed limit is generally 25 on most residential streets, so there really is no need for a bike to go over 20. And also, it is the most efficient way to get around town.
Mm-hmm. And you're an urban planner, Michael. So that we're clear, especially for the folks who may have tuned in a little later, does Chicago have the lanes and the spaces that it needs right now to be operating e-bikes safely and effectively?
No. The short answer for me is no. We haven't created the space for people to operate e-bikes safely. And
would it take to get where we need to be?
A lot more bike lanes. A lot, you know, we need to really the fact of the matter is, and this isn't just a Chicago issue, this is an issue across the entire state of Illinois. You know, we just put too many of our transportation dollars into one mode, which is driving. I mean, our entire transportation infrastructure is designed around people
cars.
Driving and not other modes. And so, you know, even in instances where we are seeing improvements, we just need so much more to make sure that people can bike around safely, whether they are on an e-bike or, as Nick has said, an analog bike, you know, an old school classic bike. And that's critical, because we also want to make sure, you know, Even as we're passing these thoughtful policies like Senator Simmons has taken a lead on, which do provide consistency, we don't want a situation where people are also feeling like a transportation choice that is now available to them is getting removed, especially for young people. Young people should be able to get around independently and safely. And the best way to provide that is good infrastructure. And I will say, though, I appreciate Senator Simmons mentioning Copenhagen and Amsterdam. In the case of Amsterdam specifically, though, you know, one thing that people overlook in the Netherlands is the Netherlands isn't just a good place to bike. It's also a good place to drive. Good bike infrastructure, good pedestrian infrastructure, good transit.
So a place we can learn from.
Yes. It makes the transportation system better for everyone, including people who drive.
So to recap here, Michael and Nick, do we need statewide rules? Yes. So yes across the board.
Yes, and consistently applied.
And remind us the regulations or the rules that you think would make the most sense. If we had to start somewhere, Nick, I mean, what should we immediately be focused on?
I want to address all the scooter types that you see are going 30, 40 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. I think those make people feel unsafe. And when we talk about who gets to use the bike lane, it's not about what you're taking, it's how fast you're going. So if you're going as fast as cars, as the case for all these out-of-class vehicles and these class 3 e-bikes, that's more appropriate in a vehicle lane because you are traveling at that high speed.
Yeah.
And also just as Michael talked about the need for kids to have freedom because the ability to travel is basically a civil right. At this point, we should be...
I want for the kids to have freedom. I mean, I'm a mom of two teens. I really want them to be safe while doing it, right? So it's always that dance as a parent, like how much freedom is too much freedom. But I want them to be able to move about in the safest way possible. How do we get there?
Infrastructure. Yeah. I'm going to sound like a broken record, but infrastructure. No, yeah, and I think as Nick alluded to, addressing the out of class motorbikes, basically, that's important. Making sure that there are consistent rules on the book.
Sticking to that three tier system.
Uh-huh. But yeah. Again, if we're not matching this with infrastructure investments, it's always going to be a half measure. And at the end of the day, good infrastructure that is designed with people who are walking and biking and rolling and get any mode that isn't a car with them in mind, that's what's going to save lives.
Keeping everybody in mind, no matter how you're moving about.
Exactly.
We'll leave it there. Michael Podgers is an urban planner and policy director at Better Streets Chicago, and Nick Hunder is a policy analyst and researcher with Chicago Bike Grid Now. Earlier, we heard from Illinois State Senator Mike Simmons, a Democrat representing Rogers Park, Edgewater, part of Lincoln Square, and more on the north side. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Mitch Armantrout. A lot of news to get to, but we had to start, of course, with the big news today. That's the government shutdown.
The fight over funding continues. So much of the federal government is shut down. This was after the 1201 deadline, after Congress failed to reach a deal to keep many of our government programs and services running. So Democrats blaming Republicans, and you might guess Republicans blaming Democrats.
Yep, pointing the finger at each other.
So roughly 750,000 federal workers now expected to be furloughed. Many offices, government offices, going to be shuttered. President Trump is vowing to do things that are irreversible, quote, do things that are bad. That's what he says, mm-hmm. as he seeks to continue to punish Democrats. And Trump's Republican administration has called for mass firings on top of this as well. So Democrats pick this fight as they demand funding to save health care subsidies. This is a big holdup. Yeah. Some of these Obamacare subsidies are expiring, which would, you know, if we don't get these tax credits, send insurance rates soaring. And Republicans are refusing to negotiate on this. More voting, more finger pointing expected today, certainly.
Fun. Now, that is the national headline, Claire. But of course, here on In the Loop, we are focused on everything local. So give us the impact of this shutdown on Chicago or just the state as a whole.
Right. So there are more than 153,000 federal employees here in Illinois. Federal workers have already experienced a lot of massive upheaval in certain departments due to a lot of DOGE cuts. Remember those earlier this year?
Yes.
So now they're facing potential firing with this government shutdown. Under a shutdown, all active duty service members and some law enforcement officers, they'll remain at work, but they won't be getting pay until these funds are appropriated. So that also means air traffic controllers, TSA officers would be working without pay, which could lead to staff shortages, big delays, longer wait times at airports near Midway and O'Hare. I know.
Well, here is Senator Dick Durbin's take on why this is important.
Why should the average American care about a shutdown? What import does it have to you and your life and your family? It's basic. It's health care. That's what this is about on the Democratic side. We think this is a battle worth fighting. We face the prospect of some 24 million Americans either losing their health insurance in the next several weeks are seeing dramatic increases in their premium payment.
Yeah, so there's more on the stance from Illinois Democrats. And so, lots to watch here.
Yeah.
We'll definitely see how long this lasts.
And it might not be a thing that happens tomorrow. U.S. Senator, we should note, Tammy Duckworth, too, saying in a statement, you know, that this is really impacting families in Illinois. Mm-hmm. It's a healthcare crisis. And the Republican Party here in Illinois has yet to release a statement as of this morning. So we're also waiting on that to see if they put something out on social media.
Well, I know you will be keeping an eye, certainly, Claire. Let's turn to another story, though, Mitch. President Trump is saying he wants to use Democrat-led cities like ours, like Chicago, for military training?
It's a great question. It's not entirely clear what he means by that. This was at this kind of unprecedented military summit that was held in Quantico yesterday morning with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Just kind of a bizarre showing all around. We've never really seen sort of a military sort of address like this. 800 military admirals and generals from around the world were flown in for this. President Trump, just kind of his latest way of describing what he wants to do in Chicago. He's sort of been floating this idea of sending military troops into Chicago for about a month now.
Yeah.
Local
leaders. How's Pritzker reacting to this? I don't think he's happy.
No. This whole way, local leaders, Governor Pritzker, Mayor Johnson, they're vehemently against this. And the governor yesterday made his latest claim that he thinks President Trump might be suffering from dementia. Which in any other sort, even in recent history, that would be national news for a governor to be saying the president should be removed from office, that the 25th Amendment should be invoked. But he's been saying that for a few weeks now. It's just kind of ratcheting up more tension between the federal government and Democratic-led states and cities. We've seen troops deployed in Portland, Oregon, ostensibly, to tamp down on crime. And protests that are supposedly out of control, which crime has been on the decline in Chicago for several years. There's certainly been protests in the city, but, they've not been large scale, I should say, for the most part. And, the violence has been largely contained.
Yeah, Chicagoans, as Mitch alluded to there, Claire, they did take to the streets last night. They were protesting, of course, President Trump's threat to deploy the National Guard here, which, I'm just so exhausted of this. What happened on Michigan?
Continuing to echo, what Governor Pritzker and what Mayor Brandon Johnson have been saying for weeks, which is we don't need the federal government here to intervene. So last night, more than 350 protesters were in front of Trump Tower and continuing to push back, raising their voices, their concerns about this increase in federal agents that we've been seeing in Illinois this month. The protest, as you mentioned, Sasha, direct response to the threat that Trump made of bringing 100 military personnel to be deployed here, the National Guard. Mm-hmm. So this group of 350 people, not small necessarily. And this was a protest that was planned within only 24 hours. So they did march from Trump Tower along the Mag Mile, which was not far from where Greg Bovino, this was the commander at large of the Border Force, was confronted by WBEC's reporter Chip Mitchell on Sunday when he told Chip that his team is choosing to arrest people based partially on how they look. Yeah. So they marched down sort of that same area chanting, "No Trump, no ICE, no troops."
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's all optics. That's what this administration has been about. That's what a Forest Park resident who was down there said. And I think she sort of echoes what a lot of folks are feeling. If you're just tuning in, this is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We are breaking down the biggest headlines that you need to know about today in the Chicago area with WBEZ's Claire Lane and sometimes Mitch Armantrout. Can you head over to suburban Broadview with me, Mitch? This is where an ICE holding facility there has been ground zero, as we've seen, for clashes between protesters and ICE agents lately. Now Broadview leaders are stepping in.
Right. Yesterday, Broadview police, the police chief and the mayor held a news conference announcing that they've opened criminal investigations in three instances involving federal agents. A couple of these are car versus pedestrian, basically, reports, and also an incident we heard about over the weekend of a CBS 2 television news reporter
Was
in her car outside the facility on, I believe, Sunday morning when there was not really much protest activity going on, and a federal agent, she says, shot a pepper ball at her windshield, shattering it and hurting her, totally unprovoked. So this is just kind of, again,
More of that.
A lot of that. And, you know, the claims from the federal, from the White House are that, you know, these protests are getting out of control. But I think certainly our colleagues have seen, and a lot of witnesses have shared video with us showing that in the cases, in the, we should say, you know, the rare instances in these protests that have been going on for weeks where things do get physical, things are very often being escalated by the agents who are wearing masks on the other side.
Let's get to some other news, Claire. Brookfield Zoo, it's becoming home to a game-changing effort when it comes to animal care. What is this about?
So this is would be the world's first wildlife blood bank.
Run that back.
So it's a wildlife blood bank.
Okay.
Veterinarians have been concerned about the lack of blood, truly, that can support wildlife. And so animals that live in our zoos, so when they need transfusions or they're going under surgery, there's just not enough of blood available to them. So this is a lead clinical veterinarian at Brookfield Zoo Chicago, Lily Parkinson, who's been testing ways to freeze red blood cells from animals. She started with giraffes and essentially be able to store them frozen for years to be able to treat animals when they need it. And the next animal of choice is elephants.
Oh, wow.
So elephant blood, giraffe blood, something that really could change emergency care in zoos and here in Chicago.
Wow, great news. Anything else you're watching?
Yeah, big political slash religion news this morning. I don't know if you saw this, but Cardinal Blaise Supich says U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who we heard from earlier this morning, has decided not to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Chicago Archdiocese. So this award was intended to recognize Durbin's contributions to immigration reform and support of immigrants, but Supich says that Durbin sort of declined.
He said no?
He declined this award. He's sort of been criticized by... this is Bishop Thomas Pebrocki of Springfield saying this award shouldn't go to Durbin because the senator has long supported and advocated for abortion and abortion rights here in Illinois. And also Pope Leo XIV actually weighed in on this yesterday. He told EWTN News that Durbin's service overall is what should be considered with this achievement award and not just sort of what he's done here and there, but everything.
Wow.
And the person that he is.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's always been this push and pull between Democratic politicians and sort of the Catholic Irish contingent of there.
Yeah, for sure. So, Mitch, while you're here, I want to quickly get in some Chicago Bears news. I saw a headline that might have been floating on suntimes.com. What's going on?
The Bears released their latest renderings of the stadium they want to build out in Arlington Heights, which looks a lot like the renderings they released of the stadium that they said they wanted to build last year, just south of Soldier Field.
Yeah.
But this, of course, with the political winds are sort of pushing them to the northwest suburbs. So they released, along with some of these renderings, an economic impact report that was actually released through the Village of Arlington Heights, which is trying to, they're going to be reviewing these plans for the next couple of months. You know, these are a lot of the rosy projections that you get for these kinds of mass scale projects that big businesses like the Chicago Bears are trying to use to gain support for their project.
So now we get to see what they sort of have in mind, the vision.
Right.
More of the vision.
And it's, you know, it's a dome, which we knew.
Yes.
You know, it's
check.
Holds 80,000 plus people, a lot bigger than Soldier Field. Soldier Field is the NFL's smallest stadium. And, you know, this is a stadium that the Bears would build. The Bears have never owned their own stadium. They were renters at Wrigley Field for a long time. They've been renters from the Chicago Park District at Soldier Field. They still need a lot of help from Springfield because they want a law passed that would allow them to freeze the property tax bill for this property out in Arlington, which they say they need to, you know, make this financially feasible. Unfortunately, there's a lot of other financial concerns in Springfield right now, as there are across the board for local governments. So that's going to be a long shot for them to get done in October.
And before I let you go, Mitch, a really quick recap, just in case there are some folks who tuned in late. We talked earlier about President Trump floating the idea of using Chicago and other Democrat-led cities for military training. He says troops are coming very soon. What should we know?
We should know that everyone is kind of waiting to see when this is going to happen. I mean, this is, you know, the latest threat, but certainly not the first one.
Yeah.
And, you know, the governor is stressed that, you know, there aren't any troops. They haven't got notice that troops are on the way right now. But as soon as they are, which the president has indicated, the state will take this to court and will challenge this. And Governor Pritzker says that the law is on his side.
The
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Meha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.